Welcome to the House of Pod, a show where we pull back the curtain on the world of medicine, we answer questions about your health, and we interview great guests.
I'm Joe, and I'm not a doctor.
And I'm Lizzie.
And I'm Kaveh.
And we're two gastroenterologists.
What's a gastroenterologist?
You know, the doctors who work with your digestive system.
Say what?
You know, your liver, your pancreas, your intestines.
Where now?
Your butt, Joe. It's your butt.
Oh.
On today's show, we have Cody Johnston and Katie Stoll. They are the hosts of the podcast Even More News, which to my knowledge is, correct me if I'm wrong, the first and still only news podcast out there. And they co-host The Worst Year Ever with Robert Evans. Thank you guys so much for coming on our show.
Thrilled to be here.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
And you were right that it is the first and only news podcast.
Still.
And it blows my mind.
It really is surprising.
Right?
No one's jumped on it.
It's probably going to be the last one. Yeah. Yeah.
The
I think I'm sorry to break. I think it might be like one of those fad things that just fizzles.
Yeah.
So sorry. That's
right. Well, speaking of news, but the first thing I want to talk to you guys about, I kind of just needed you guys here like as a therapy session to some degree. And I think you guys need it and we definitely do, but you guys cover the news really closely. Obviously you put out like multiple shows every week. You're following lots of news topics, lots of news sources. How are you guys staying sane during that process?
Let me preface that by saying we're GI doctors and not therapists.
Oh yeah, you're not. No. You're going to help us here. We're not helping you. So how are you guys?
Yeah,
how are you
that's
guys
true.
Dealing with it?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know that we are. it depends on the week, really. How are we dealing? I'm very conscious of my Twitter use these days. During the week, as we're producing multiple shows, I'm pretty engaged online and following topics and stuff. But on the weekends, I really try to step back. If I'm going to come in, it's, you know, something maybe a little less political, not engaging, not following his stuff as closely. That's one thing for sure that's helping me. Also, this is two different questions. There's like, how do you stay sane in general with it? Mm-hmm. And then how do you stay sane right now?
Yeah.
Because it's some weeks I feel pretty grounded and good, all things considered. And other weeks, I feel like the wheels are coming off of the wagon and a little thing will set me off. But I try to, I don't know, I allow space for that. I'm kind to myself. I try really hard. I'm not good at starting new hobbies.
Yeah.
You know, little pastimes.
I was going to ask you actually if kind of what you guys thought about kind of social media and being connected all the time.
Yeah.
But then I took that question off my list because I was thinking it's your job and it's kind of an unfair question because mm-hmm. part of your job is to have your finger on the pulse of politics and the zeitgeist and Twitter. And so I just, I was like, that's not a nice question, but it's nice to hear that you're aware of that.
Yeah, I think about it all the time. There's a weight to it. You know, we tweet, Cody's got a lot more followers than me, but between all of us, we have this reach and you can fire off a tweet or you're in the safety of your home and you don't know who you're reaching. And that can be scary when you stop and think about it. On one hand, it's also beautiful. The amount of messages I get from people that are saying thank you and I'm very grateful and I'm really, I do not take that lightly. That means the world to me, especially right now. And that is a power of social media. On the other hand, you get weird, angry people that latch onto you as representing the things that they hate, or, you know, weird obsessed people that start to make you feel uncomfortable.
Right.
And,
I was gonna say latch onto the things that they love, including with an intensity,
yeah.
maybe to you. And when you betray them, you know, people
yeah.
who are not stable or who are getting angry or stir crazy in quarantine might snap, you know.
And before we started recording this, we were talking briefly about our Mark Cuban episode, and I think that's a good example. There's these expectations of us as public figures or in our shows and us standing up for everything that they believe in. But sometimes there's going to be, you know, I can't agree with you always, you know,
yeah.
but we can disagree kindly. And
no, we can't. Nice try.
Right. Well, it gives you credibility if you can disagree occasionally.
Yeah.
So Cody, how do you, are you doing similar stuff? Are you guys having powwows about your mental health?
Similar stuff, I think. When this kind of started, I stopped going on Twitter. I couldn't do it. It was sort of like, right after like a lot of primary stuff was being settled, and then this happened, and then that sort of highlighted a lot of the issues that I had personally with how that went. And then just sort of everyone, it was too much. Everyone, every problem that you can imagine about Twitter seemed to just amp up instantly when this happened. And I was like, it's not healthy. It's not good. It's never been healthy or a good website. And I've started to get back to it, obviously, because I have to, and keeping up with things. But I've tried to be better about like making specific chunks of time for that, and then getting away from it. Because for like at least the past however many years, it's just always there. Like it's always in your pocket, it's always in your mind. Like I would always sort of be checking it instead of like, this is the time when I check these things. Then like I know like with the first year, the first iteration of the Some More News show, we would do it like every week. It would always be sort of a scramble, and towards the end of that, I started to like get like very heavy breathing and like anxieties, like stress, sort of like health issues pop up. So I've just been trying to be conscious of that and like allow myself space and time, also edibles.
You're like, I'm conscious of this. I'm doing yoga, meditation, blah blah blah, blah. And also edibles.
Also, edibles. I like write music and take edibles. So it's too clear of it.
Yeah,
the internet is such a double-edged sword when it comes to this, and there's so many positives to it. I mean, exactly, just like what you were saying, Katie. You know, I don't love our neighbors. Like that I live around, I live in like a two physician household, and they like avoid us like the plague. Mm-hmm. They're like scared of us. We don't like see them come out and talk to us. It's like these people on Twitter that are like reaching out to me, being like, hey, how are you guys doing? Is the hospital okay? Are you guys all right? I mean, mm-hmm. It's really sweet. It's really touching. I can't say enough for that. I mean, it really does help. And in terms of medicine, I specifically know that the doctors that were on Twitter that were following this early on were the ones that took it most seriously in the very beginning. Like at work, I was one of the few doctors that was really concerned about this like early on. And because I was seeing these stories coming from other places, and I would talk to other people about it, and they were like, nah, I'm not as worried about it. Now I think everyone's sort of up to date, but Twitter was really useful in that way. Yeah. But it really, at the same time, there's only so much that you can do and make it healthy. Because at some point, it's just all these conflicts I'm getting into online, Twitter, and Facebook. I mean, I feel like I have to do it on one hand. Like as a medical professional, I have to be out there promoting like real science and promoting like the truth. But it's so hard to do. And it is, I think, it's really sort of wearing me down. It's like the thing that's so tiring to me. So it really is a double-edged sword, and I'm not quite sure what to do. And the fact that my phone gives me like weekly updates on how much time I spend just seems cruel and unusual right now.
Yeah, no, that's very mean.
Can't you shut that off?
I probably can. I probably can.
I'm not sure if this is something that you've done yet for your Twitter, but you can turn off notifications. You can customize your notifications for people you follow, but you want to engage with people. But especially if you're going back and forth and you're getting down a rabbit hole with people, sometimes that's helpful because then I'll forget. I don't give myself the opportunity to feel angry every time somebody responds, because I might engage with it for a minute or two, and then I go about my life and I'm not scrolling back through also, to find the responses.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good idea.
And I've seen, I forget where I first saw this, but like basically once a conversation on Twitter is like four responses back and forth, it's useless. You're talking about something entirely different from what you started talking about.
Right.
And everyone's like amped up and resistant to any sort of like actual conversation. So doing that and being like, here's my response, here's the truth, people will see it or they won't, and that's that. I've also found like sometimes now I just DM people.
Yeah.
And that goes so smoothly.
They're not performing for everyone else too.
Right.
Right. So like their response is going to be a little more open and honest and like even vulnerable sometimes. And like you can have an actual back and forth. It doesn't have to be reduced to like two sentences. Mm-hmm. And almost every time I do that, the conversation ends, we both were saying like, that was good. Thanks.
Yeah.
Which never happens in public.
Right.
So
right. Yeah. No, you're right. That's such a great point too, because you probably actually spend less time if you do that DM direct messaging that person as opposed to making it this long drawn out thing. So it's actually saving time. Well, that's a really good
point. That's like in medicine now, we're trying to do all these video visits. I don't know if you've had any encounters with doctors as opposed to telephone. And people are saying the feedback is that everyone loves it and that the visits are actually shorter and more meaningful because it's video. Because there is something, you know, we talk about social media and we're talking about the badness of it, but there's a connection, right? Yeah. And there are two sides to it. It is the double-edged sword that Kaveh's talking about. But this... I think the data is coming out that the video visits are shorter because people feel more heard, you know? And I think that's what direct messaging is probably doing, that you don't need to throw the tantrum because you're getting your voice heard.
Or just like log off and never go on Twitter.
That's a totally
valid
approach.
Throw your phone in the toilet. Yeah.
So speaking of the things that kind of drive us crazy online, like the conspiracy theories are a lot of what we're dealing with recently. We just had our friend Rebecca Watson come on. She's like a pretty well-known internet skeptic and talking about these things. And it just blows my mind that it's so widespread. What are the conspiracy theories that really have surprised you? What are the ones that have really shocked you? What do you think are the most dangerous? And where do you think they're coming from? Like, where are these conspiracy theories coming from? What's the one that really surprised you the most?
With respect to coronavirus, not like the anti-vaxxers. Yeah. Right. Let's keep it topical.
Yeah. You go, Cody.
I mean, I see.
He's like, so many. Where do I start?
I don't know. I mean, yeah, like every couple of days you see a new, like, here, it's this drug, actually. It's the thing that's going to do it. And that seems like the most dangerous, right? Because that's like telling people to like self-medicate with something that is based not in reality at all.
Different grifters.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also just like the, I mean, this is inevitable during these times, but also just like the past few years, especially ramped up, just like, this is a plot to do X.
Yeah.
Like, they're doing the virus on purpose so that we'll do this. It's to get this policy in place, or like the global, like all that kind of stuff.
Right.
Bubbling up where like, even like, cause you know, we see the situation where, okay, well, maybe one thing that would help is like a universal healthcare system. Maybe something that would help right now is like giving people money. Like, and so there are all these policies that are being put forth that would actually help right now. And I think a lot of people are resistant to those and see them as like, oh, that's why they did it. They did this so that they can do these things. And you see that all the time. See it with like, even like Green New Deal stuff and climate change.
Yeah.
They're like, doing it. They're lying so they can do their socialist agenda. It's like, well, no, it's just a good idea that would help.
It was a good idea before and after.
Yeah. It could be both. It's fine. Yeah.
There's just no consensus on what the truth is. And look, I don't know if there ever was in human history, but it's certainly worse now. And so it's very easy for people to be like, no, I don't believe that. I believe this thing. I agree with you. Those things are all infuriating. I've gone out of my way to not find out what plandemic is. So I won't talk about that. I just couldn't. I was like, nope, no,
same,
not going to do
it. Same here. I saw it. I saw the clip on it. Yeah. And I was like, no, I'm out. I tapped out.
I have no idea what it is. I did the same thing. I have no idea. It's beautiful not knowing.
My bandwidth is full. But the first thing that comes to mind, and this one's tough because we're still gathering information. What makes me crazy right now is how, we talked about this a lot on Even More News this week. This administration, conservatives are, in general, are trying to paint China as having nefarious intentions with the virus. You know, it's man-made. Well, maybe it's not man-made, but it definitely escaped from the virus. Why did it escape from the virus? Why did they let it escape from the virus? We're going to have to look into this. And the reality is that maybe it was an accident in the virus from a lab. Maybe we don't know that. The White House had warnings about this lab in particular having safety concerns and the regulations not being up to date and all this stuff. But accidents happen at our CDCs, and you know, viruses have been unleashed and then contained and stuff, you know, but that scapegoating because like there's on one level, like maybe it was an accident from a lab and that is one thing that we're talking about, but the underlying insinuation from this is that China is our enemy or Chinese people are to blame.
Right.
Yeah. And I have no more bandwidth for that. I am furious about it.
No, you know, it used to drive me crazy that they would call it the Wuhan virus. Not because I care about where they labeled it from, but because I felt it was like an obvious attempt for him to get away from it being called COVID-19. Because the 19 comes from the year it was discovered, 2019, which then implies that he knew about it beforehand, or at least they had some hints or some warnings. And even if you're being very generous with how much the Trump administration was briefed on this early on in January and February, even if you're saying that, you still can look back and say, well, because of all these dumb things we did in terms of our international relationship, we lost good men on the ground and women on the ground in China that are supposed to be there monitoring these things for us because of bad foreign policy decisions. So, and it's funny when I ask, like, where did these conspiracies come from? I wasn't even thinking that. Clearly, to some degree, they're coming from the top. Like Pompeii and Trump are dropping like these little like hints about like it coming from being man-made or something. It's more mind-numbing to me and more aggravating because of that than it coming from some sort of random internet hack.
Yeah, and they come because so many times conspiracy theories come from like just fear and like not knowing and like wanting to sort of feel in control. Like, well, actually, like I do understand this because it's this simple explanation. But now we have people who are creating those conspiracy theories not for that reason, but for blame.
Right.
Yeah.
So you have, it's coming from a different reason, but influencing the same people for the reason that they usually work.
Right. It's scapegoating, blame, and it's clearly diversion, right? Because we know there are all these stats coming out that if, our government, if Trump had declared a pandemic or an emergency or encouraged shelter in place just a week or two earlier, I think like tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of lives would have been saved. You know, if Wuhan had closed their doors sooner, you know, it's just, if we just had a week or two heads up, this is diversion. Like whoever's fault it is, let's say there is a truth there, there's also the distraction diversion on campaign absolutely. As well, which is terrible.
And it's not like what he's done, the entire time. And so like, this is just like the worst scenario for that.
Right.
And it's not like we don't have plenty of blame to go around. I mean, you can blame China too for maybe not handling as well or sharing all their information as well. Those two things can be true. So shifting gears a little bit, because you guys cover politics really closely and all the candidates, and Worst Year Ever, your podcast has done a great job about sort of giving us the rundown on a lot of different candidates. First question I have about the upcoming elections is that do you have fears that voting is going to be significantly affected by the pandemic? How is it going to be used or misused because of the pandemic?
Massive fears. Massive.
Do you have any? I want to hear about the fears, but I mean, there's also maybe some good that can come of it, right?
Yeah, I mean, California, I guess, is now everybody's getting their mail-in ballot. I think we did that before, but you know, there are some states that are going to rise to the occasion, and maybe that will, in some places, expand voting turnout. I don't know, it's going to be. I mean, we're not going to be seeing this in every state.
Right.
Very valid fears, it sounds like to me. I mean, what are you guys, in terms of seeing silver linings like voting by mail, what silver linings do you think could come out of this? Do you think that there's any chance that America could come out of this and learn some actual lessons that might be useful?
I think it's possible.
That's the hope, right?
You look historically, after the Great Depression or World War I, I guess. I don't know. I'm not a big history person. But, you see big social changes after huge traumatic cultural events like this is, I guess, my point. And, I've heard people talk about, immediately after things like this, the Depression, there's, a crackdown on warmongering or people that are, getting all the money for themselves.
The Enrons of the world, the corruption,
And
profiteers.
And so it helps me to think positively of this is the kind of turmoil that does lead to big social change. We have we're in a particularly precarious and scary situation with our media landscape, with who's in charge, with conspiracy theories, with the lack of consensus on truth, and we're so divided, and it's worrying. It's worrying because there's this election is so important, and also we don't have an inspiring candidate. Like, I'm not trying to like rag on, I don't want to spend time ragging on Joe Biden, because I have a lot of mixed feelings, even as we're covering it, as how we should recover this responsibly, because on the one end, he's not my preferred candidate. On the other hand, I don't want Donald Trump. And there's a lot to unpack there. But it worries me. It worries me that we don't have somebody here standing for the things that we need right now.
You guys talked in your show about how if there's too much confusion and not support behind Biden, people might not vote. And that's a terrible prospect.
But
on a granular level, what are you scared about? Like, you know, because in my mind, Corona, you know, will divide socioeconomically extremes of people. I think the divides will get greater. But as far as voting, maybe there is this opening to make it more equal. But what is the fear that like only red states are going to open and everyone's going to vote, and blue states, the mail order, you know, the mail voting will get sabotaged somehow? Like, what is the, because I know you're obviously a liberal slant, but what's the granular fear?
So granular fear. Okay. I think in red states, you know, and this is generalizations, there are a lot of higher percentage of conservatives who don't take this seriously than in Democrats. Okay, so red states, perhaps there will be a higher turnout in for them versus Democrats in where we need them. So there's that fear. Also, vote by mail is a really big thing to orchestrate, and it's a really expensive thing to orchestrate. And my fear is that we're not going to be organized or do it properly, or that there will be confusion, or, you know, people might not, I can't remember which state it was in this primary that they had after this was going on, because everything's a blur right now, but they rushed to have mail-in ballots for people, but some people got them on time. A lot of people had to request 3 or 4 times and never got it. So then they had to go down in person. Uh-huh. I'm afraid of that. To fund it, and there's all this stuff with the postal service too, you know? So that's what scares me. And misinformation and people not knowing what to do or forgetting to mail it back in, that's always a thing. And but making sure people understand, here are the places you can safely drop off your ballot if you forgot to mail it in. It's a big shift for a lot of people in how they approach it. And there's so much chaos right now. I'm worried about the messaging, I guess. However, fundamentally, I think it's a very important shift. Reset that.
It is important shit. It is important shit.
It's a very important shift for us to make.
It's sort of like what you're talking, like alluding to, like that's sort of my fear amidst about everything. Mm-hmm. Where like this is like the voting by mail, and like we've like. Our elections are garbage in America. We like founded the country on the idea that everybody should vote, and we still can't do it. It's embarrassing.
It's our one thing.
It's the one, thing where you're like, let's do it, and we still can't manage it. No. And it's shameful, but this is the kind of thing, like maybe this will get us to do it. And my main worry is that it's just like the leadership isn't there to actually get it done, to like do what Katie, you're talking about, like organize things. And like, make sure it actually happens. Make sure everyone, like, everything's communicated to everybody, and make sure it happens. In the same way with like, we're talking about like Medicare for All, things like that. Obviously, the current candidate that we have decided does not support that, and that's fine. But like in this time when we're talking about these sort of shifts with public perception doesn't ever really make that change. It's when the money is behind it. It's when the politicians actually accept it as something that's going to happen and start talking about it. So unless we have figures and powerful people saying that it's possible and probable and good, then that's one of my worries, is that we're not going to be able to shift to that, because the Overton window in terms of, I think, public perception has already shifted. Towards this idea that there's a human right and all these sort of things we talk about. But it hasn't shifted for politicians. Mm-hmm. A few of them, kind of, but not in a confident way. Because as soon as somebody says, as soon as like, I won't say Biden, but like if there were more popular senators saying it, people would get on board instantly. Yeah. And the fact that they're not is one thing that I am concerned about personally.
Mm-hmm. I'm also
and
worried.
Not just about that, but like about everything we're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. In terms of vote by mail, I'm also worried about not getting my I voted sticker, so I can't take my I voted selfie. Because if I don't have that selfie, did it even happen?
No, that's exactly true. It's the only reason I did it.
Yeah, we love it. We love doing that.
Also, so, young people take this very seriously too. And young people vote for the Democrat more than they vote for the other guy. So I'm like what you were talking about with like whether or not people will actually even go out. I think there are people who will be like, no, I'm going to do it. We're going to get rid of this guy. And, but like, I just think there are a lot of people who are like taking this very seriously and don't want to,
exactly.
Make it worse.
Wisconsin. Yeah. Wisconsin.
Exactly,
was a great example of, how it could go wrong.
Well, you guys have a really good grasp of not just what's happening politically, but what's happening sort of like amongst the youth, the kids, the young people of America, more so than I think, you know, most of us do. But two questions. One, do you feel like your exposure on social media to what young people are thinking and how seriously they're thinking about politics, do you feel like Twitter and the social media that we're on is giving you sort of a false understanding, not full? I mean, because or is it kind of representative of the youth? I guess not, right?
I don't think it is. I think it's representative of a type of youth, of a subset of, and perhaps our future leaders and people that are really important to pay attention to and listen to. But I know it's not, just like anything, Twitter is not representative of real life in real, because this is a massive, massive country. And it's easy to forget that.
Yeah. When Trump won, I was like, I'm so out of touch with reality. That was the one thing that like one up part of the sadness or disappointment was that I just all of a sudden realized I don't know America.
I had it completely wrong. But back to the, just touching on the youth question, I know for like my nephew is 19 and I'm a liberal family and I've done my best from the distance. I live in LA, but I've done my best to like engage with him and talk with him about it. And he just isn't interested.
He's not interested. Care, huh?
Right.
At all.
Even
in,
still.
In what?
He in politics? In trying to change anything. I mean, he's disillusioned. He doesn't care. I think that it's very true that a lot of young people do not have enough experience in life to understand what is at stake with their vote. And I think some kids do, and I love them for that. And that's great. But I don't know that that's something that we can fundamentally change overnight. I think it takes it's a gradual process. I don't think that kids ever have been that engaged, but my nephew specifically feels even more turned off from it because it's so heightened around him. He's got people saying like, well, we have to beat Donald Trump. And then there's also a lot of conservative pockets in the Bay Area. I'm from Woodside, California. There's a lot of like cowboys and stuff.
Yeah. No,
and
here,
so there's a lot of the
sure.
opposite. Yeah. Yeah. And my nephew's like literally said, fuck it. You know, I don't believe in any of them. None of them are going to do anything.
It's
like,
doesn't
see, but that's
like almost
that's
hedonistic.
Why,
I'm living for the moment.
Yeah.
That's why I think it is representative of it. Though, because that attitude, like what you're describing right now, that's one of the main reasons Donald Trump won.
Yeah.
They are tired of it. They hate politicians and politics. Everyone hates politicians.
Yeah.
That's something we like forget.
But I mean,
like, there's a big like rally around, like I see like all these like embroidered pillows with politicians' faces. I get it. It's a reaction to like Trump getting elected. People hate politics.
Yeah.
And especially young
people.
But that's
not going to change, I don't feel like. I mean,
probably
because,
not.
Like, we
I'm not,
can
I'm
change.
Not being positive about that. I'm just saying.
It's a problem because, like, even a Bernie Sanders or something that does invigorate the youth and, you know, we talk about positive change. He's still a politician to kids. He's still an old white guy. And again, they just don't have the life experience to understand. When my nephew, 10 years from now, when my nephew have health insurance because of a job, you know, he lost a job, I'll talk to him about it before
his day-to-day doesn't change based on politics, but we should all unite in our hatred for politicians. It's amazing.
No,
but, maybe this will change this virus.
But I have to say though, that is one of the major problems I've seen in this country, is that everyone hates politicians, which I totally get, but they hate them equally. And yeah. This whole like South Park libertarian, really Republican bullshit is what got us into this problem in the first place, is that people are like, I hate that politician and I hate these politicians. All these politicians are the worst. Mm-hmm. And that's how we got here. And I'm like, yeah, the young men all suck and maybe Biden does suck, but God, I would vote for a bag of rusty nails right now over Trump. Yeah. And I would do so enthusiastically, and I'd wear a rusty nail sticker on my car, and I will make phone calls for that bag of rusty nails too. It's like, that's the problem, is I don't want to hate everyone equally. Maybe some people a little bit more.
Yeah. Like elections don't happen in a vacuum.
Right.
And people seem to treat it like they do. I don't know.
Well, we'll switch from politics and give you a break and let you guys go soon. But we talked earlier, Katie, you and I both moved in with our significant others like 2 weeks before shelter in place. So how has that been going? Mating in Captivity is is I think a famous book and also a podcast and now our lives. So
listen to that. I'll say it's going well. It's great. I'm very grateful to have companionship, and in many ways I think that we'll look back on this time as something beautiful. I think that there are a lot of special and sweet moments, and I don't take that for granted. It's also getting to know somebody in a very intense, abnormal way. And it's hard. And like, I'm, especially when we got started doing this, he's a voiceover, he's an actor, but he's a lot of animation and stuff like that. So he's got a little bit of work, but his life is upended. He's a creative person that's used to performing in front of live audiences, and he doesn't have, you know, he was feeling a little bit lost, whereas I was immediately so much busier. And there's that strange stress of like, how are we sharing this space that's respectful and considerate? How do we take time for ourselves without being offensive to the other person?
Yeah.
And how do we deal with the triggers that we're not expecting to come up?
Right.
What are the things that, like, what past trauma of mine is being reactivated, and what are of his are being reactivated? And at first there were definitely like landmines where you're like, I didn't know I was not supposed to step on that, you know? But I'm proud of us, but I'm not going to pretend like it's always easy. Some weeks it's great. And then some weeks you're like, how are we going to do this for years?
He definitely needs to start a podcast. Definitely.
I think so. We've talked about that, and he's got the gear. But I'm grateful. I am really grateful. But I think that there are pluses and minuses to both being single during this time and having a partner. But I'm grateful to not be alone. I mean, I think that I would be really focusing on not touching somebody for a long time, not having a hug. Sorry, Cody, to bring that up.
You're right.
You know, mating in Captivity, Cody, you've had some experience on apps and stuff. Have you been chatting with people?
A little bit. I mean, I just kind of started dating right before this happened.
Yeah.
Again. And then it did. So I kind of stopped again.
How is that? Are there apps now? Are there new apps for like social distancing or quarantining? Like that would be so interesting.
That'd be interesting.
They do advertisements within the app. Like, hey, people are doing Zoom dates now. Do you want to? And that kind of thing. So like they have adopted times. But
several of my single girlfriends have been dating, quote unquote, but you know, like going on a social distance walk.
Oh, interesting.
But I do have one friend who will remain anonymous who...
Jennifer.
Fell in love really quickly. Jennifer, we'll call her Jennifer, was meeting somebody and they social distance for a while, and they finally were like, built some trust. They hadn't been seeing anybody, like, fuck it, let's date. But it exploded. It imploded pretty quick. It's an unnatural pressure of your,
right.
That was brand new, and you were the only person I'm seeing, and all of a sudden, no, you know, it was just unnatural.
Yeah. There's going to be some really interesting relationships that start from this. It's going to be like in our generation, it'll be the closest we get to that sort of like Jane Austen, Emma-esque, just like a whole courtship of words. You're going to be like emailing each other back and forth, sending like letters and Zoom. And then finally,
everyone learning calligraphy.
Calligraphy. Yeah. Exactly. I think the Zoom is great though, because it puts a 40-minute limit. You know, if it's free, I don't mean to advertise for Zoom, but it's free for 40 minutes. So like, that's great. Cause every time I was dating, I'm like, how do I get out of this date? How do I end it? You know what I mean? Like, because it's Friday night and I already put my foot in my mouth and said I had no plans this weekend or no plans tomorrow. At least, you know, when I was smart, I'm like, oh, I have to work in the morning. Like if I wanted, or I text my sister, like text me, call me. But like Zoom 40 minute is a wonderful thing. We should be appreciative of these things.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Thank you, Zoom.
Yeah, thank you, Zoom. Although we are paying for you now, but thank you.
Thank you, Zoom, and thank you guys so much for your time. It's it's been so much fun.
Yeah, I don't know. So much.
Lovely.
Yeah. Do you guys want to plug your shows? Please do so.
Sure. Yeah, we have several shows. Some More News is our YouTube show that Cody hosts, and Even More News is the podcast we do once a week. That's a companion to that show.
Okay.
Cody, do you want to do the other one?
We also do a show called Worst Year Ever, named for some reason. We host it with Robert Evans of Behind the Bastards. And Google our names and you'll probably find all that stuff.
By the way, for our listeners who haven't listened to it, they actually named it well before this truly became the worst year ever. It
was unbelievable.
Most appropriate name. And you guys, we really do appreciate you coming on. And I can speak for many, many, many listeners that, you know, your shows are a big part of what helped, you know, us all pass the time. And you're doing a lot of really important work right now. So we really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. That really means a lot. It does.
Yeah.
Coming from, yeah.
No, I mean, listen.
Coming from you guys that are doing real work.
No. Actual things in the world.
You're the real heroes here. No.
I accept that.
It is true, though. I mean, I worked all last week in the hospital, and I have a bit of a drive. And I mean, listening to podcasts like yours is a big part of what helps me get into a good place. So we really appreciate it. Thank you, guys. And thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Sorry, there's a plane coming. I was just pausing for a second.
Okay, can you hear the, there's a lawnmower?
No, not really. Yeah, it's fine.
Okay.
No, but we're going to delete all this.
Do you hear me farting really loud during the
that
thing?
I can hear.
Constantly.
My dog has been licking her asshole for like this last 5 minutes. So
she really gets good in there. She's really aggressive.
Like super clean.
The opinions on this podcast are broadcasted for educational and informational purposes only and do not represent the opinions of our employers. These opinions are not intended as a diagnosis, treatment, or as a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Please consult a local physician or other healthcare professional for your specific healthcare and/or medical needs or concerns.